Welcome to our latest edition of Charity Pulse podcast. My name is Catherine Rostomji. I head the charities practice at Shakespeare Martineau, and I'm joined by my usual colleagues, Charles Mosqueter, Charities Director from Quilt Achieviate, and James Saunders, Audit Partner at Moore Kingston Smith. Now, we've had an interesting time of things, I think, since our last podcast. In particular, the Charity Commission have announced that they have removed and disqualified two trustees. And you think, well, so far so good, what's the big story? But it's from the Captain Tom Foundation. The disqualification orders are for 10 years and 8 years, so not insignificant, of the daughter and son-in-law of Captain Tom. And also, I think the timing of the removals is interesting because the Charity Commission hasn't yet published their inquiry report into that. So clearly, the Commission must have evidence that satisfies them that removal is appropriate. But I think there will be more to come on this when the inquiry report itself is published. And the other big story, big story, would be that we now have a new government. I think we're already seeing some discussions around, will this mean that things are different for charities under a Labour government? I think the language so far has been interesting about politics of public service and building a government of service. And Charles, I know that you have experience from pro bono economics, having done work in this area. I just wondered if you had any initial thoughts about the new government and what that might mean for charities.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting that they approached pro bono economics back in the back end of last year and had a summit with the sector in January. And there was a very clear message from the then shadow front bench around its intention to work more closely with the sector. It did say at the very outset that there wasn't more money, so I think people shouldn't get overly excited about that part of it, because I think they've got an awful lot of other things to do. But I'm any change in that relationship between government and in the way that charities are funded must be welcomed, because I think that will be much more, I think would make, remove a whole lot of bureaucracy or even try and do so. The only thing that is a little bit alarming is I think that the new Minister for Charities is not the same one as the shadow. And the two things I think would be worth watching for. One is whether it stays where it is under culture, media and sport, whatever it is, and goes back to the Cabinet Office. I think that would be a real intent if that happened. And the other thing is one can only hope that a minister will stay in post for a reasonable length of time. And I would say that across the whole of the thing. I think one of the problems was the musical chairs that went on previously to that. And it just, you know, how anybody can get a grip of the subject and everything else if they're moving every 6 months or 2 years or a year or whatever it may be. So I think if they are intent, then people need to stay in their job and really get to grips with the brief.
Yeah, and I think that ties into one of the stories you'd seen, James, about charities must have a seat at the table, is what sector leaders have been saying. And any thoughts on how you think charities could interact with the government?
Yeah, I think actually the sector had a reasonably stable Secretary of State for some years. Stuart Andrew had been in post for a while and had been shadowed by, I think, on the Labour Party side, by quite a number over that, the course of that. And I think he generally was quite committed and pretty good in the role. Exception to the rule, really, as far as those Tory ministers went in the last few years. But it'll be interesting to see now who comes in there, because as you said, Catherine, Lisa Nand has been appointed to the DCMS, and of course, presumably there will be a parliamentary undersecretary for charities or whatever the position was that Stuart Andrew had. What was your question again? What was the?
I suppose charities having a seat at the table, and what you think the main policies might be of the government, or main issues perhaps.
I mean, there's one big area straight away that this Labour Party is focused on, and that's education and the matter of VAT being put on independent schools in order to fund those 6,500 teacher roles they want to bring into the state school, and with the aspiration of raising the state school level of education. That's a big one that's going to rumble on I think the general gist is at the moment that those schools affected in the independent school world, it'll affect them in 2025, that 2025-26 school year expected now. But in the meantime, there's going to be all sorts of challenges, I would imagine, to that policy, because it's obviously there are a lot of very vocal supporters of independent schools who will get involved in this and have been involved over the last couple of years since the Labour Party's been flagging this one. Other than that, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Charles mentioned earlier, the overtures, if you like, from the Labour Party in the lead up to this election to the charity sector. I think I mentioned last time I didn't see the word charity in their manifesto, but there was a clear commitment to the civil society, third sector, whatever you want to call it. And they've always said they expect to work hand in hand. So we'll see how that works out.
Just going back to
Charles.
Stuart, just going back to Stuart Andrews. I mean, I don't disagree that he'd been in post, but I mean, civil society wasn't his only brief, if you remember. He had loneliness, not quite sure what brief that is. He had sport, tourism, youth, and I think ceremonies, including the coronation, and then events. So I oh, and then I think there was arts and heritage, and they're thrown in there as well. So that was a really mixed brief. I can't say. I mean, he how I'm it's difficult to judge, isn't it, about how dedicated he was, but his profile, I didn't see very much press comment around him as far as the charities are concerned. He wasn't, like David Miliband, who seemed to be very much so when he was minister for charities, or for the third sector, seemed to be much more proactive, much more visible. So I think that whoever takes on the brief does need to have that visibility, does need to engage. I think the sector also needs to be more proactive in coming forward with solutions rather than pointing out the problems. I think it is too easy, to see all the faults, and actually possibly we need to just, as a sector, is focus on some really key issues and not worry about everything all at the same time. Because I suspect what happens is that in government you just get this massive noise, and it's very difficult to try and sort out, differentiate between a lot of the different subjects.
Yeah, which ties in, I think, on a previous podcast, we talked about the mysterious envelopes of cash, and a fifth envelope of cash has been delivered to a charity of old £20 notes with a handwritten note, and they don't know where it's coming from. And I suppose, just to your point, Charles, of not necessarily worrying about everything all at once would be, seems to me these charities are accepting these donations and very happy to have it for these small charities, that's quite a significant donation for them. And I suppose with thinking of small charities, there was reference to the Small Charities Coalition no longer being in existence and whether the voice of small charities now is not being heard. And I suppose as well that point about independent schools, the charity sector is so diverse. How does anyone speak for it with a collective voice that is informed? But I just wondered particularly whether small charities might well be feeling then they're not adequately represented and voiced.
There's definitely a gap. I'm sure there's, I mean, there is clearly a gap where the Small Charities Coalition used to be, and a couple of other organisations of a similar nature. So, we've often said the charity sector needs to, as Charles said, needs to be proactive in putting itself forward. Even then, small charities at the moment are really not being heard at all, because of the lack of any sort of representation on their part. Now, the Small Charities Coalition used to be brilliant at, punching their corner, if you like. But there's a real problem for small charities at the moment. I mean, there's another, we've seen some other articles about small charities struggling to get funding in general. I'm not absolutely sure that it's quite so sweeping and generic, but it's definitely the case that smaller charities, on occasions can find themselves in real financial difficulties, and with no real obvious solution or voice to represent them coming forward. So, yeah, it is a real problem.
I think your issue, isn't it, is that there is no single person or body, umbrella or regulator who really is in a position to be the voice for the sector. You know, we would hope that the Charity Commission is more of a voice, and I think, to be fair, they are. But again, they're a regulator; they're not really there to be the champion of. They're more to protect the integrity of the through good regulation. You know, I would encourage the umbrella bodies, and they did it, I think, in COVID and other things, to actually get together and have some clear messaging around what it is to be the benefits of being a charity. And I think charities also need to, you know, remind everybody that they are a charity. I mean, I know I've said this before, I walk across our village playing fields and the village hall, and I suspect if I did a survey across the whole of our village, which is about 800 houses, majority would look at it as a council facility, not as a charity. And I, you know, there's a real missed opportunity there of telling everybody as soon as they come in that actually the organisation is a charity and for the public benefit of the village and the local community. So, you know,
the problem, Charles, as well. The problem at the smaller charity level is by their nature, it's going to be a much more diverse group. You know, there's going to be far more, different diverse types of charities in there who are of a smaller nature. So it's a very difficult balance to find.
Absolutely.
But a great way of
I was just going to lead into another story that I'd spotted, and I would, as to close with, I suppose, just be interested in your thoughts, because we're all experienced in terms of dealing with grant making charities. But this comment was, funders are afraid to allocate funding to small charities as they perceive them as being more likely to close. And this was recently said at a conference. And I would just interested in your thoughts, was my personal experience is often smaller charities do better for grant funding because they're not sitting on huge amounts of reserves, and many grant funders want to make sure their funds reach the front line of whatever service provision that is. So I just wondered whether in your experience that's indicative of what you're hearing.
Yeah, I think funders are very keen to give to smaller charities for the reason that these days people want to see impact. They really do want to see impact. And I don't think it's a question of, you know, small charities don't get funding. I think it's possibly that those that don't and can't demonstrate their impact well enough don't get funding. To be brutally honest, you know, I'm absolutely certain that people want to give money where they can find that they're getting impact for they're getting bang for their buck, frankly. We've been saying on these podcasts for a long time, it's about the value for money. You know, the funders are there standing there with their checkbook out, ready to give you money. Make sure that you can put yourself in the best, position in their eyes and show what they are getting for their money, not just what you are getting with the money.
Yeah, I think smaller charities have a much greater chance of actually getting money. I think they just need to engage more probably with their community. And, you know, they're much stronger in volunteers. They're much more often than not based into the local communities, and therefore will have much stronger ties. I think the bigger issue actually is around the what I call the middle tier, the squeeze middle, because part of the problem with that is the larger organizations have just got more sophisticated as far as fundraising is concerned. And, you know, everybody's getting better and better and better at it. But of course, brand awareness does bear out at the end. So that is the area where I think there's a much greater problem.
I'd agree with that, Charles. Absolutely. I think that in particular, anyone in that squeeze middle who's dealing with government or councils in any, that is where the money really is being squeezed at the moment. Everyone's drawing back on any of those more formal grant arrangements, service provisions. And we're hearing, or anyone in the health sector or in the social welfare sector, social care sector, that's where the money has tightened up so much in the last couple of years. Every year after year, just reducing time after time. And that's where charities are giving back contracts, getting out of the business and can't make ends meet.
I'd love to see an academic study looking at the benefits of procurement, because I think we have become mindless a lot of occasions in the way that we go about procurement. And the problem is that all they can do is judge on certain criteria, which is generally price. and let's have a look at the post office and what happened there, where it was done on price, for all the problems that arise, rather than looking on the quality and the caliber and actually making a judgment on that, however much. And I know there is meant to be a concordiat between in government around not disadvantaging smaller companies, but as far as I can tell, is that larger companies always do far better when it comes to procurement, because they always get more points on the scoring mechanism. And to me, that doesn't necessarily lead to better outcomes.
Well, I'm going to wrap things up there then, Charles, because that's a huge topic in terms of procurement. I'm hoping our dear listener might know an academic friend who can input into this study. But thank you for joining us for this latest podcast. Please do like and share amongst your colleagues and contacts. We very much welcome feedback on our views on these podcasts and also other topics you might like us to cover. And we look forward to hearing from you, or hearing from us rather, on the next podcast. Thank you.